soon they had the fantastic idea of essentially training a deep generative model to be able to design automatically novel molecules. The goal of this was to use the AI, which wasn't called at the time generative AI, but now is referred to as generative AI, to automatically design some molecules which would have the potential to solve some very concrete challenges of molecular optimization that the chemists were facing in their research.
Welcome to the AWS Health Innovation Podcast, where you can learn from entrepreneurs and investors who are driving progress in healthcare and life science around the globe. Imagine being able to design novel drug molecules with the same ease as typing words into a computer and being given the instructions into how to synthesize that molecule in the lab. That is the incredible potential of Ichthos, our guest on today's episode of the AWS Health Innovation Podcast. I'm Alex Merwin from AWS, and I'll be your host as we learn more about Ichthos. Ichthos is an innovative French company specializing in the development of artificial intelligence solutions applied to chemical research and new drug design. Their technology platform enables major productivity gains in the critical early stages of pharmaceutical R&D. Our guest today is Jan Gaston Maté, the founder and CEO of Ichthos. Jan has a unique background spanning engineering, biology, consulting, and entrepreneurship before taking the leap to co-found Ichthos in 2016. Jan will share insights from Ichthos' startup journey, including evolving their business model, key partnerships that propelled their growth, financing, and the multidisciplinary culture they fostered by bringing together AI experts, computational biologists, and medicinal chemists. This is a really good one. I hope you enjoy it. Let's get started. Good morning, Jan Gaston Maté, the founder and CEO of Ichthos. I'm really excited to have you on the AWS Health Innovation Podcast. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much, Alex.
You're welcome. And where are you joining us from today?
I live actually in Rennes, which is the capital of Brittany. So I'm working from home today. So I'm in my house in Rennes.
Oh, fantastic. We have a French theme this month. So it's great to be showcasing some of the great innovation coming from your part of the world. Let's start and just tell us a little bit about Ichthos. What's the origin story of the company? What problem were you initially trying to solve when you first came up with the idea and what got you started?
Yeah, of course. So actually, it wasn't originally my idea. We are three co-founders at Ichthos, and I was the third man, the man who joined the other two, who are the actual inventors of the original Ichthos technology. One of them, Quentin, is a chemist. What started working in the field of data science applied to chemistry, trying to solve some chemical optimization challenges by using advanced data analytics technology at the time. And the other one, Nicola, is a specialist in AI, had a PhD in artificial intelligence from just before the days of deep learning. And the two of them actually met and started working together. And soon they had the fantastic idea of essentially training a deep generative model to be able to design automatically novel molecules. The goal of this was to use the AI, which wasn't called at the time generative AI, but now is referred to as generative AI, to automatically design some molecules which would have the potential to solve some very concrete challenges of molecular optimization that the chemists were facing in their research. So what Nicola did is that he used a deep generative model algorithm, which was used at the time for natural language processing, image processing, and he trained this model on a large database of public database of molecules. And he was able essentially to develop the first version of a deep generative model, which would automatically come up with novel molecules. And the idea of this technology was to guide this algorithm with some reward function in order to generate molecules which could solve some real challenges. And that was the beginning of the story. I was happening to work very close to them in the company they were employed. When they came up with the idea, they decided to leave their jobs and to get started on creating this new company. They came to me and asked me if I would be interested to join, and myself, I was actually looking for an entrepreneurial challenge. I was at the time freelancing and had several actually biotech projects that were cooking. They told me about their idea, and I was very familiar with the challenges and issues in drug discovery. So that got me very excited, and I decided to partner with them and in order to start the company, which was done in September 2016.
Jan, that's a great story. I find the reality is always messier, right? And I love these little details at the origin story. So when they approach you, didn't a little bit of you think that they were crazy for trying to do what they're doing? Because it's such a huge idea. How did they convince you to leave your stable job?
I didn't have a stable job at the time. That was the, I would say, what made it easier for me. I had decided to quit stable jobs and I was freelancing. I was doing some consulting in data science and also strategic consulting. And at the same time, I was really actively looking to create my own company. So actually, they came at the right moment. Actually, it was not completely the right moment because I had another project which was more in traditional biotech. My project was to develop a new drug in oncology, which was progressing significantly at the time. So I had to work in parallel on the two projects for a while until it became obvious for me that it was the right choice for my and the right bet for me to. So I just dropped the other project. Unfortunately, I had to, but I don't regret it.
Yeah, of course. And we're going to speak a little bit more about the types of products you've created and some of the collaborations you've set up and the impact. But when destiny comes knocking, sometimes you just have to answer. Before we continue on the Ichthos journey, can you tell us a little bit more about you? What brought you into life science? What inspired you to focus your life in this field?
When I was young, I was pretty much what's called as referred to as a good student. I was pretty much doing okay in all topics. I was interested by everything, but eventually turned to science. And actually, I took the prep schools in France called Maths-Sup Maths-P, which took me to take the competitive exams for the French École d'Ingénieurs, Grandes Écoles d'Ingénieurs. And I succeeded to at the exam for École Polytechnique, which was one of the most renowned engineering schools in France. For many years, I worked very hard, and then I was admitted at École Polytechnique, and then I started to think, okay, what am I going to do with my life? And there were actually many potential avenues for me, and that's when I started reflecting about what I would do, and I started realizing that I was more interested to work in healthcare, life science, biology, rather than in finance or economics or other fields of engineering. And actually, that probably comes from my family heirdom, I would say. My grandfather is an oncologist who has done some pioneering work in oncology in his days. And it was certainly very appealing to me to start working in this field. So after I got Polytechnique, I did some postgraduate studies at another engineering school called AgroParisTech, which is specializing in biology. And then after that, I joined the pharmaceutical industry, working at Servier in France for 6 years, and that really got me in the field, essentially. After that, I did other stuff. I worked in strategic consulting at Capgemini Consulting. Then I went back to pharma, where I worked at Ipsen for 6 years, and I became, at some point, director of research strategy. That took me until 2012. Then I decided to leave and do other stuff. That's when I discovered the field of data science and big data. I was hired by a company to develop business for data science applied to healthcare and pharma. And that's when I learned the topic, essentially. I stayed there for 2 years between 2012 and 2014. But then I really wanted, again, to become an entrepreneur. And I quit. I started freelancing and doing a lot of stuff. I was at the same time doing some independent freelance consulting to bring food on the table. And at the same time, I was also actively working on some startup projects. And as I was saying, I was fortunate enough to meet with Quentin and Nicolas when they needed a third man to help them build the company.
There's a few parts of your journey that stick out to me. So my dad's an oncologist as well. And I find that people who work in healthcare, there's usually two paths. They either were a patient or they're very close to a patient and they saw firsthand how broken the system is and they feel a deep need to go do something about it, or they were exposed to it by a family member that similarly worked in the field. At AWS, we work, of course, with life sciences and core R&D, but frontline healthcare delivery as well. And I engage with a lot of early stage communities here in London that support healthcare professionals and GPs and physicians that are looking to get into industry. And of course, there's the parallel within academia, within life science as well. And that 0 to 1 is something that I get asked a lot. How do you go from an academic career into startup? Or how do you go from being a junior doctor into being at a health tech company? And I think a lot of it is you can't plan the path A to Z. You need to embed yourself in the ecosystem and create your own luck in a way. And just put yourself in the position where you're going to collide with the right people. And ultimately, it's a who question. Who do you really want to team up with for a decade? And then it's a what question of, is this big enough to make a dent in the universe and to be worth spending that much time on? And your experience really brought you to that point where, you know, everything lined up, but you just had to be at the right place at the right time.
Yeah, absolutely. It strikes me that at the same time, it took me a while to find the opportunity to create a company. But I had figured out after spending more than 15 years in really big companies, not huge companies like AWS, but very significantly big companies, that this wasn't really for me. And I was really aspiring to something different. But then finding the right opportunity is really a matter of coincidence and luck. And it will not happen necessarily. And also the path I have chosen, or that chose me maybe, was erratic, I would say. I moved away from research for 15 years before going back to it through my work at Ictus. And interestingly enough, I authored my first academic peer-reviewed paper when I was older than 40 years old, whereas most scientists, they publish when they are young, when doing their PhD, and then during their postdocs, and then they stop authoring papers and start doing other stuff. It took me actually 15 years after the beginning of my career to author my first scientific paper, which made me quite proud, actually.
What was it about?
It was about some discovery of biomarkers, essentially, in oncology.
Let's talk a little bit more about the early days at Ictus. That first year, that first 2 years, thinking back on it, were there meaningful challenges and milestones that were really critical to get right in those early years? And how did you go about overcoming them?
Yeah, you know, what happened, which is uncommon with the stories of Ictus, is that we didn't have any ties to an academic background, because although Quentin and Nicolas, both are PhDs, they had moved away from research, they had been employed in companies, and they came up with the invention of our generative AI technology in a context which was very far away from academics. So actually we didn't have any like a structure or technology transfer office or anything else who would potentially help us to get started. It was really a matter of convincing potential investors and we also were old enough to have a family, kids, a rent to pay or a loan to pay. So it was not an easy decision to get started with this in this adventure. So the early days, it was a matter of, okay, are we sure that we want to do this? How committed are we? How confident are we that our technology is going to succeed? And there were many questions and personal decisions to be made, which were not so obvious at the time. Initially, we decided to ask investment funds and if they would be interested to invest at the early stage of the company. But of course, we only had our nice story. The technology was barely working, and depending on the days, was working, was not working. And we all had jobs on the side. It took us a few months. And at some point, we had been disappointed by the contacts with some investment funds who at the beginning were very positive and then in the end decided not to invest. And at some point I decided to essentially to take my address book and to identify all the people I knew whom I knew had some money and could potentially be interested to become business angels for the company. And I started to say, okay, maybe I'm going to call them and just ask them if they would like to invest. And the only thing is that I wasn't sure if the technology was really working or not, because we were experiencing some pretty disappointing results at the time. And Nicolas didn't have time to work on it 100% of his time. He was doing this evenings and weekends. He had a day job, I would say. So I was hesitant to do this because these were people I knew who trusted me. I didn't want to disappoint them. There was some kind of personal credibility at stake. And finally, Nicola found a good way to make the technology work. And we started getting pretty interesting results. I took my phone and called as many people as I could. And in a matter of 2 weeks, I was able to collect 300,000 euros of investment, which enabled us to get started. And that was really the first key milestone for the company. At the same time, the same year, I remember I had a very old connection to Servier, where I had started my career 20 years before. And I had managed to secure an appointment with the head of medicinal chemistry to discuss how a potential collaboration. The company barely existed. It was a very early days. So it was a very important meeting for us. And I remember that the technology was not working at the time. And I remember taking the decision the morning of the meeting to just send an email, say I had an important agenda conflict and I needed to reschedule the meeting, because I really wanted to make sure that when we had the meeting, the technology would be working. So this delayed the meeting for a few weeks. But actually, when we had the meeting, everything was working much better. And we were able to actually start discussions, which led us to our first collaboration with Servier in 2017, which actually ended up to be a real actual success, and which we could actually publish the results in an academic paper a couple of years later. And it really turned out to be our first and most important collaboration for the reputation of the company at the time.
So let's go a little bit deeper on your financing journey, because the decision on who to take the initial investment from is extremely important for impacting the trajectory of the future growth of the business. And now you're obviously at a later stage of capitalization and you're setting up these partnerships and you've brought on institutional investment. But knowing what you know now, are you glad that early stage fund said no and that you rose from angels and that you had more IP when you actually were raising? What are your reflections on that?
I'm glad that we raised from angels the first seed round. This gave us a real flexibility and margin of maneuver. And actually, we were able to do a fantastic job during the first 2 years, I would say, of the company. We raised a little more than 300,000 I think it was in June or July, the first year, that was 2017. Then we raised again with another group of business angels, another 300,000. And on top of that, we had actually applied for some competitive grants from French BPI France to support innovative companies, and we were selected. So we got more than €1 million in the bank, which for a French very early stage startups is pretty comfortable. And that actually enabled us to finance the company until the beginning of 2019. And I think it was the good way, because I'm pretty not sure that we would have found the right investors for us at the very beginning. However, what I do regret probably is that when we raised again in 2019, we decided to stick to business angels and not to have an investment fund in the cap table. And that was probably, looking in the rear view, a mistake.
And was that due to the lack of capitalization and how quickly you could staff and hire? Or would you have liked to have brought an investor on that maybe was part of a corporate VC arm or had a strong set of portfolio relationships and just the value beyond the capital that many funds provide?
I think that, again, looking in the mirror, it's always easy to look back and say, okay,
what did you do
right? Exactly. Right and wrong. But essentially, I think that we should have raised more capital in 2019. It should have been a more ambitious round, and we should have had a more ambitious plan to create value, rather than sticking with our idea of growing the business incrementally, I would say, with a business plan which was essentially based on the growth of software sales and services sales. We should have gone more for a more aggressive strategy towards value creation through discovery of new molecules. We should have done it earlier, probably. I think one of the benefits of having funds is, first, of course, they have the experience, they have seen many early stage companies, and they can help you figure out your financing needs, challenge your plans in terms of development. They can also put pressure so that you can hire external talent, senior leadership who can actually help you structure the company better. And so they can actually accelerate, I would say, the growth towards more maturity of the organization. And we probably, missed an opportunity there.
Let's fast forward to the current day. And can you share a few stories about the product portfolio? Let's talk about your customer relationships. You've been able to generate value today. Can you tell us more about that and a few of your partnerships?
Yes, of course. So essentially, we started really as kind of service provider to pharma companies or biotech companies doing drug discovery, using our AI technology to help them design better molecules, which would have higher chances to meeting their success criteria for becoming a preclinical candidate or at earlier stage, a good hit or a good lead. So this is the type of work that we did at the beginning. But the plan was to use this as some kind of a way to build the credibility of the company, to establish relationships, and then to progressively transition to a software as a service business model. And that's what actually we started doing by essentially developing a software as a service platform, Machia, which is essentially a generative AI platform for de novo drug design. And as soon as 2018, we started working on a new technology, retrosynthesis, AI for retrosynthesis, and we developed Spire, a second platform more aimed at helping synthetic chemists planning the synthesis of compounds by essentially exploring how to make them in the lab. So these are our two main software products, and our ambition has been to grow the software revenue so that progressively we can scale up and generate more recurring revenues, predictable revenues, and so on and so forth.
Jan, let's talk a little bit more about Spire, and I want to learn about the data sources that inform your models. There are companies that are focused on de novo molecule design using generative technologies, right? What I think is really compelling about Spire is you're bridging the gap between in silico and the real world, right, with what you've built out there. So can you say more on that?
Initially, we started developing the generative AI technology for de novo drug design. And then we were interested by the work, which was initially published in Nature, I believe, on AI for retrosynthesis. And we really understood that this was highly complementary to our work in generative AI. Because essentially, a generative AI algorithm designing molecules is not a chemist. And so it won't know that a molecule needs to be made in the lab. So actually, we found out that many molecules which were generated by generative AI systems are hard to synthesize, and actually that has been reported in the scientific literature. And so we initially started to work on the retrosynthesis AI with the idea that, okay, it would be an interesting additional technology, basically broadening our portfolio of products and offerings to the market. But then we really understood how important it is to have this plugged in the generative AI technology to actually force the generative AI algorithm to generate synthesizable molecules. And actually that has proved to be a very important feature that actually sets Ichthos apart on the market of generative AI technologies in chemistry, where many providers who have started putting this in software actually struggle to come up with good quality molecules which you can actually make. So that was really the first step was, okay, let's build this retrosynthesis AI technology because it's cool. The second is, okay, we need it into the generative AI tech. The third step was actually, if you think about it, why not explore the chemical space by using essentially retrosynthesis virtual chemistry approach, meaning that actually you start from a small fragment and you are able by adding some virtual reactions step by step to grow the molecules and improve it. This actually enables you to design molecules which are synthesizable by design and where actually you can set some real constraints of real life chemistry, because you know that you can only use some building blocks, the ones you can purchase from your selected provider. And you know that you can only use some reactions and that some exotic reactions which are described in the literature are not available in your lab. And these are the real life constraints you have to live with. And that if you are able actually to design molecules which fit these constraints, then you are really bridging the gap, as you're saying, from between the in silico and the wet lab, and you are actually able to address real life challenges. And that was actually what this logic, which took us to the next step, which is what we call the Ictus Robotics platform, where actually we have built a platform where the AI design molecules, then the AI explores how to make them. And then the third step is that a robot actually automatically synthesizes the compounds that they can be tested very fast. And this is a very unique concept that we believe has the potential to completely transform the way small molecule drug discovery is handled for the chemistry side of things.
We've done a good job of covering a few of your foundational technical capabilities. So we've spoken about your generative models, we've spoken about your multi-parameter optimization, but we haven't touched on active learning much. That bit on the robotics, can you speak to how important it is to have recursively improving algorithms and the role that active learning has in Ictus?
Yes, of course. If you look at the in silico drug design from a very high level perspective, you know, ideally, what you would like to have is a perfect in silico model, which can predict all the properties that you need to optimize into a single compound. Of course, the biological activity and potency on the target, the selectivity versus anti-targets, and all the very nice, very important ADMET properties. So the cellular permeability, microsomal stability, solubility, efflux, toxicity, et cetera, et cetera. So if you are able to have models which can do a perfect job at predicting in silico if a molecule is going to be matching your criteria on all of those properties. And if on top of that, you have a generative AI technology, which is able essentially to design a molecule meeting those predicted properties, then, you know, you just need to make one molecule and it's the one. Okay. And in that case, you wouldn't need a complex automated synthesis platform and you wouldn't need active learning. But that's a dream. Actually, that is a dream which is out of, you know, which is impossible to reach. The reality, as a famous statistician once said, is that all models are wrong, though some are useful. And the reality is that you still need to synthesize molecules and to get the data and to understand that the models sometimes was right and sometimes was wrong. And the only way actually you can get away with it is to accept the fact that you need to sample the real world, meaning you need to make molecules and you need to generate data and you need to use those data to improve your models. And with this circle of active learning, adding new data will enable you to improve the performance of the model and to converge towards the optimized molecules. And that's why actually being able to bridge the gap between in silico and in vitro is so important. That's why you need to address the question of how fast you can go from the design of the molecules to the generation of new data, which will enable you to, you know, make a step forward in the right direction. And that's the meaning of the Ictus Robotics platform, is to be able to address this gap between the ideal world of in silico models and the real life data.
So machine learning is incredible at quantifying the connections between very complicated optimization spaces, right? And we look at healthcare as a great place where machine learning and AI can have a positive impact. But because of how complex the systems are, we don't have models that can perfectly describe them. So we have to have active learning, which you just described. But the challenge for frontline healthcare delivery is having active learning involved in the core product development creates a regulatory challenge, because the way that the current regulations are set up around software as a medical device, each time you update the parameters of your machine learning model, you need to provide that model for review and validating its safety and efficacy with the relevant regulators. But what really excites me about the work that you and others are doing to apply active learning and deep learning within life sciences research is that we already have such a robust mechanism for validating the safety and efficacy of treatments through preclinical and preclinical development and clinical trials that at this stage of the drug discovery process, you really can use these technologies in a safe and efficacious way. But can you bring this to life? And are there any projects in any therapeutic areas or with any drug development collaborators that have gone through the ICDOS platform and have gotten to preclinical development or any promising early candidates to take everything we've talked about and bring it to life through an example?
These are confidential stories, so I cannot go into the specifics, but relatively recently, a very nice collaboration. We had actually several very nice collaborations with some Japanese pharma companies, and our client was essentially working on a late-stage lead optimization project and trying to identify molecules which would fit 8 success criteria, which they had set, which would qualify a lead compound for undergoing advanced testing in advanced disease models in vivo, which would qualify them as a preclinical candidate. But they were very far away from that because their best molecules were only matching 4 out of 8 success criteria. We worked with them for 12 months. At the time, we didn't have the ICTOS robotics platform, which is quite recent. So actually they took care of the synthesis and testing of the compounds with a CRO of them. And in those 12 months, we were able to transform radically the quality of the molecules and actually come up with a large number of molecules meeting 7 out of 8 criteria and some molecules meeting 8 criteria out of 8. One of those molecules was actually selected for undergoing the advanced testing of in vivo disease models, and this work is still ongoing. This is one of our most recent success stories.
It's very exciting. Jan, what is your ambition for the next few years? What goals do you have for your team?
We have realized with what we have learned on the business and the technology, at the beginning, we were reluctant to actually engage into drug discovery ourselves. We probably didn't have the right amount of capital or the right skills in the company. But then with our ambition to build the ICTOS robotics platform, it makes much more sense actually to perform the drug discovery ourselves. Because actually we have in our hands a very unique platform enabling us to accelerate drastically the synthesis of compounds, to control this active learning cycle. And we believe that if we get to make the decisions ourselves on which compounds which actually be synthesized and tested, we will be much more efficient. Actually, one thing which is important about ICTOS is that we also do medicinal chemistry in a different way because our medicinal chemists use AI. It's their bread and butter. They have a different mindset that, what we see at our customers, medicinal chemists at pharma companies who need to learn about how to use AI to design drugs. Whereas, again, at ICTOS, we live and breathe through AI for drug design. That's why we decided to invest more recently in drug discovery enabled by our ICTOS robotics platform. And this is the way we are taking. Our objective is not actually to take those molecules that we will those preclinical candidates that we will find. It's not to take them to clinical trials ourselves, but more to find partners for further development in clinical trials. And also our main objective is also to become a discovery collaboration partner for pharma companies and biotech companies who have very nice targets, who have expertise in biology, and who can benefit from the excellence of ICTOS AI technologies and our skills in AI-enabled drug design. Of course, we will also continue to develop the software and to deploy the software and hopefully to convince the scientific community in pharma companies to adopt the software. And we will continue to run those two business models in parallel.
It's very exciting what you're working on. You mentioned that the medicinal chemists at ICTOS, that they think a little differently than the medicinal chemists at some other organizations. Can you speak more to how you, as a leader, create a multidisciplinary culture and how you enable this diffusion between in silico expertise and wet lab expertise? And how important is that for your success at ICTOS? And what learnings have you earned the last several years in creating that multidisciplinary team?
when you start a company at the beginning, it's so small that it's obvious this is how it has to happen because everybody shares the same office, essentially, you know. So they talk together, they work together all day long. So it's obvious and natural at the beginning. And we are very fortunate that it was actually founded by a medicinal chemist on one side and a technologist on the other side. And it's because they started thinking together of what they could do. So they started bringing this kind of multidisciplinary philosophy into the company at the very beginning. And that's really part of our DNA, I would say. But of course, then it takes more effort to keep this going because as you grow, you have an AI team and then you have a computational chemistry team and then you have a medicinal chemistry team and then we have a synthetic chemistry team for the Ictus Robotics platform. And those people, of course, you need to make sure that they will continue to discuss and to work together on a day-to-day basis because what you want them to do is actually share their thoughts, think together, brainstorm together and come up with ideas which are really cross-fertilized by each other's brains. So that requires some effort, which we essentially do by having really a lot of scientific discussions, which are really organized on a weekly basis between all the different departments of the company. So we organize knowledge sharing, we organize, you know, cross-disciplinary brainstorming sessions, strategic thinking sessions with lots of contribution from different departments and teams of the company. So this is something which is highly important at Ictus, actually. Myself, that's my really pleasure of the for each Monday, we have the weekly scientific committee meetings where we can really have some presentations of recent scientific works from the teams. And again, everybody's invited, everybody contributes. It's highly, you know, multidisciplinary, and I think it's a very important feature that we need to keep.
So Jan, what advice would you have for other founders and other early stage teams that they want to make a dent in pharma R&D? Maybe they've come out of a lab and they have a unique mathematical insight, a new class of algorithm they want to test, or maybe they have a unique insight into the biology or chemical processes. So if you could rewind and think about where you were sitting in the early 2010s, what advice would you have for those early stage founders as they want to, you know, follow a similar path as you have?
If I look back, I wouldn't encourage doing it, you know, alone. I think it's quite hard to be an entrepreneur. And the fact that we were a team at the beginning helped a lot. When there are hard times, I think it's really difficult. You can get pretty lonely if you don't have your partners to discuss with and to rely upon, and someone, when one is more feeling down, the others will comfort him and or her. And I think it's important to maximize the probability of success. The second thing is that you need to select the right people, of course, to partner with. And regarding Quentin, Nicolas, and myself, it's really, we are very different from each other. We don't think alike. Very often, we have different visions of the world. But I think we have a common decency, I would say, and we've been very faithful, I would say, to the kind of informal contract, informal agreement we had in the beginning. That's important to understand who you're teaming with, and you want to make sure that when the times are tough, you can count on your business partners, essentially. The other thing is, it's very tough. So, you know, you only get to interview, I guess, people who made it. We are still a very early stage company, and we need to still prove the value in the long term, but still we are one of the few survivors of dozens of companies who failed much earlier. And I think we should remember it's a pretty tough journey and there are pretty bad days, but there is also a lot of excitement and it's a unique adventure. So I think you need to know if that's for you or not. But essentially, if you think too much, you would never do it because it's not a reasonable choice to decide to quit a stable job to create a company. So it's really because you're passionate and you believe that's what you're made to do, essentially.
Jan Gaston Matte from Ictus, thank you so much for joining me today on the AWS Health Innovation Podcast. I had a lot of fun learning about you and the company.
Thank you very much, Alex.
Thanks for joining us today for the AWS Health Innovation Podcast. If you want to get in touch with AWS, please check out our show notes where you can find a link. If you enjoy the podcast, the best way to support us is to share it with your colleagues and friends. We also really appreciate your reviews and ratings wherever you listen to podcasts. We love hearing feedback from our listeners, so please don't hesitate to get in touch. Again, you'll find all the details in our show notes. See you next week.